This is from an album called Bookends. Have you ever heard of this album? But I'm going to just read the words to you. It's the theme of the Bookends album. Time it was, and what a time it was. It was a time of innocence, a time of confidence. Long ago, it must be, I have a photograph. Preserve your memories. They're all that's left of you. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about time. And time actually falls into a lot of categories of music. Maybe some of you know Pink Floyd. Well, time, you know, wonderful music there. On their Dark Side of the Moon album. And then there's another older bunch of tunes from the 1960s, and they just shout out, time! Time! Religion, though, if it's worth anything at all, asks us to reopen parts of ourselves long closed. Religion, it seeks to remind us what it is to re-examine the world in order not just to understand things, but to cherish the time of our lives. And one of the shocking discoveries of growing up is that growing up never really quite happens. We carry within us all that has ever been, just as we needed to be reminded of our holiness when we were children. As adults, the reminder is needed more than ever. Sometimes when we're down and out, a new set of behaviors will lift us out of that depression. For example, it's very difficult, I think, to feel down when we're in motion, when we're, for example, dancing. If we want to change how we feel, then we must change what we do. However, even in the dancing, in the doing, in the motion, in the action, there are no guarantees in this life we share and in this life that shares us. So here's the wisdom from that sermon scripture. It's Ecclesiastes. Again, I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to the skillful. Time and chance happen to them all, for no one can anticipate the time of disaster. Like fish taken in a cruel net, and like birds caught in a snare, so mortals are snared at a time of calamity when it suddenly falls upon them. So time and chance. Throughout our married life, Catherine and I, we've argued over one thing more than any other. And when I remember meeting with the minister who counseled us prior to getting married, he said, you're going to argue about four things. You're going to argue about money, in-laws, sex, and religion. And sex includes children, by the way. We really don't argue about those things as much as we argue about something else. What do you think that is? Time, yeah, time. And when I say that we argue over time, what I mean is that we argue over the use of time. We ask each other, how are we spending our time together and our time apart? Life unfolds due to choices we make, but also by pure chance. A heart attack happens to one person who's been leading a healthy life. An automobile accident ends an active lifestyle of an athlete. And a school shooting changes the lives of numerous Florida families. And indeed, time and chance, it happens to all of us. I appreciate that passage Penny shared. It's from the Sermon on the Mount. It has a certain significance in terms of how much of our lives we spend in stress and anxiety and worry. Jesus asks, can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your span of life? And taking a cue from Ecclesiastes, Jesus concludes the passage with these words. He says, "Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow it will bring worries of its own. Today's trouble, it's enough for today." Again, the question is, how are we spending the time of our brief life, of our mortal life? How are we doing this? I was at a book club this past Wednesday. I don't share everything that happens at book club. I'm not supposed to, but this is very interesting. One of the members of that book club said, "As I get older, money doesn't have the hold on me it used to, and I realize the gift of just letting go. He said, I feel I'm more generous because I realize that I do not go on forever. Now is the time for me to give back because who knows what will happen tomorrow, and the time is now." Well, fit right into the sermon. We have heard the expression, time is money. But here in our church, let's look at another expression. Time is life. Mary Oliver, the poet, she says, "What are you doing this very sacred moment with your one, with your only one precious life?" And this goes along with the oft-quoted question, "Are you earning a living or making a life?" Well, we all want meaning in our lives, which we do consider precious and unique and limited in time and space. Each one of us would like to make a mark on humanity in some way, make a difference, make a contribution that will prove of lasting significance to the welfare of the world so that we can be remembered. Yet, when our days are filled with fragments of activity and business and various efforts attempting to make the ends meet, eating, sleeping, engaged in social obligations, how can we also seek meaning-making? Therefore, the sanctity of the present moment is often sought simply by coming here, attending church with your family. Of course, others in northern Michigan, they can experience the ultimate reality by communing with nature, which I suppose a few are doing today. Or communing in community is another way of working it out. We all have varying styles of engaging with the sacred. I was reading a book this past week, and I'm still trying to catch up on all of these books. I keep getting more and more and fall further and further behind. Do you ever feel like that's happening? I do. This is the Rebbe, and you'll see that the Rebbe is part of the beginning of the service. It's our service meditation. The Rebbe Menachem Schneerson is his name, and he has these recommendations about how to use the time of our lives. And he says, "When you wake up in the morning, while you are still lying in bed, think for a moment, what does it mean to be awake, to be alive in the world? So begin each day with a word of thankfulness. Begin with a meditation. Begin, if you will, with a God prayer for the new day. Acknowledge your soul, the vibrancy, the fortitude it provides. Think about what you could accomplish in that one day. Train yourself to do this every morning, and you will begin to see your life in a new, sharper focus." Now, that's tough for me, so I'm working on doing that one day out of every month. But he wants us to do it every day. How can you do it when you have little Harvey there, Beth? You know, sometimes kids get in the way a little bit, but they do wake you up. Concentrate, he goes on, concentrating on your soul, it's a day-long activity, not to be confined to those first waking moments. Create spaces during the day when you can be alone with God. Study something meaningful, using your intellect to think about God. As your day grows increasingly hectic, look back to the calm moment when you awoke, unless you have children, when your thoughts and desires were crystallized. Try to recapture that focus. And then you should end your day just as it began. As you prepare for sleep, review the day and how to use its opportunities. Go to sleep with the resolve that no matter how good or not so good today was tomorrow, it will be better. If you do so, your sleep will be more peaceful, your waking more meaningful. And so I tried this. I worked on it for a day, and it worked for that one day. The next day, I had a one-year-old and a three-year-old that kept waking us up, and it didn't work. So what can I say? It works sometimes, and sometimes the magic doesn't work. Well, this is a Jewish mystic who's saying that instead of letting the seconds and minutes and hours control us, we can attempt to control them by instilling sacred memory into each moment. Eating becomes a way to nourish the body and the soul. Going to work is not just earning a living, but providing an example of discipline and hard work. And visiting with family and friends, it's not just a duty, but an opportunity to magnify the heritage, to pass on the traditions. Sleep isn't just wasting 8 hours of the day, but an opportunity to rejuvenate the body and the spirit. There's a story about a father who is concerned about a son wasting away, wasting all of his youth. The father and the son, they went for a walk by a lake. And the father said, "Look how the entire landscape, the sky, the sun, the mountains, how it's reflected in the water." And then he dipped his hand into the lake. He flicked some of those droplets with his fingers. The father encouraged the son to look at one of the drops on the ground, one of those drops of water. In that one drop, the entire reflection of the landscape could be seen. It was visible. And the father said, "The same is true with time. 1 minute has all the properties of your entire life. It is a microcosm of the entire day, just as one day is a microcosm of your entire life. And so you should treat every single minute accordingly." Well, sometimes it is a process of unlearning a lot of what we have already learned. We've been taught to think in terms of money and time, in terms of the future rather than the present. We've been beaten down by the world and have been poisoned with thoughts, with feelings of helplessness, hopelessness. We often spend much of our time remembering the past and dreaming about what the future could be without living worthwhile lives today. And rather than enjoying and savoring the present experience, focusing in on it, we spend a great deal of our time thinking about the consequences of our actions. We often get caught up in paperwork rather than savoring the actual experience. There's a joke about a man who had the opportunity to ask God any question he wanted. So the man asked how long a million years is. And he said that to God. "How long in your years, God, how long is a million years?" And God replied, "It is just like a single second of your time." And then the man asked, "And what about $1 million? God replied, "To me, it's just like a single penny." So the man gathered himself up and said, "Well, God, could I have just one of your pennies?" And God answered, "Certainly, my child, I'll get it for you in a second." Investing ourselves in these single seconds, it's an eternity, you see. The sages say that when we grasp for everything, we end up grasping nothing. And problems and goals, assignments are addressed one at a time. And again, the sages say that even the longest journey can only be completed one step at a time. So many of us have been taught to look at each step as a side trip on the journey. But the secret to the journey is to keep an eye on the destination and to keep traveling toward it without veering off course. John Smith has just left us, but he has a little sign outside of his home. And I just read that this past week. It's the journey is the destination, which we've all heard before. There was a movie years ago. I'm not so sure how many of you saw it. It starred Jack Nicholson. And it was called About Schmidt. Any of you remember that movie? About Schmidt? The story is about a man named Warren Schmidt, who finally retires from an Iowa insurance company after a long career, looking forward to retirement in a large and fully equipped recreational vehicle with a large pension fund and large savings account. While wealthy, he discovers that many things are missing from his life, including a relationship with his family and his friends and himself. He may have been asking himself something like we might ask here in Cadillac, who am I now that I, Warren Schmidt, am no longer senior vice president of the Iowa insurance company? Who am I now? Or we may ask, who am I now that I am no longer this particular teacher in our Cadillac public school, or this nurse at the Cadillac Munson Hospital, or the small business owner, or the forester with the natural resources department? Who am I now? Who am I now? Who am I now that instead of doing this particular job, I am being human in this particular way? Who am I now instead of being an active, healthy worker in society, find myself aimless in retirement, or discover myself as a ruptured appendix in the emergency room? No matter how old or in what stage of life we may find ourselves, growth and challenge help us to become larger, spirited persons rather than rigid, constricted human beings. So here are a few questions for us. First, are the experiences towards which we gravitate ones which demand constant growth, or are they repetitive, stuck in a routine? Are they part of a convention? Are they something that will keep us secure? What will our lives have meant when completed? Second, are our encounters with the hurtful things that happen in our lives hardening us, making us more suspicious, cynical, and distrustful of the world and of each other? Or have these difficult experiences created in us more sympathy, more integrity, more resiliency, and more love? And is our response to our stupid mistakes and failures that of honest and open and accepting forgiveness, or in mindless unforgiveness? And third, what is the general direction of our living? To what point have recent decisions moved us toward making some unique difference, or toward holding out for justice, or creating excellence in our lives and that of others? Or are our decisions those that make us similar to everybody else, like watered down human beings, so as to come off as completely inoffensive and bland? You and I must be aware of how any religion ought to work in our living. For one thing, the Christian Bible is not concerned with the fact that we have flaws and that we sometimes get caught up in stupid and sinful, shallow, weak, cheap behavior. Likewise, it is not concerned with guarantees of security, whether this means a throne in heaven next to Jesus or a massive fortune accumulated while on earth. Our religion is much more concerned with our actions in response to what happens to us in life, our actions. Abraham Heschel has said, it doesn't take a spiritual genius to recognize the tragedy and the stunting of human beings who were created to grow, the inherent sacrilege in the confining of minds and spirits that were intended to flow freely, or the sheer holy waste when human beings turn their backs on these unique sacred capacities. With that in mind, I'll conclude with a little story also by Abraham Heschel. It's about a town where all the clocks had stopped. And by the way, if you want a picture of a rather unique and unusual clock, Rachel found one for us, and it's on the front cover of the bulletin. Yeah, that's a clock. I wanted a grandfather clock She said, why not a grandmother clock? And then she said, wait, I found this one. I said, how does it work? And I guess it works with our imaginations. Maybe some of you know or have seen this clock. Tell me how it works, because I have no idea. Back to the town where all the clocks had stopped. Despite the best efforts of the townspeople, none of the clocks could be coaxed into starting up again. And eventually the people of the town, they all gave up and let their timepieces stand and rust. But one man wound his clock every day just as he had when it ran properly. He had hope. One day a watchmaker happened to pass through town. The clocks that had been neglected, they were now so rusty they were beyond repair. But the watch that had been wound every day could be fixed. So it is, says Heschel, with our religious impulse, our sense of God. This needs constant winding every second, every minute, every hour, every day, and every year of the time of our lives. Because with the winding, we will wind our way home. Amen.